It's less than a minute before the meeting begins. We just want to make a couple of quick announcements. Thanks for joining us in an effort to maintain a fragrance-free zone here at Theosophy Hall. And during the pandemic, it has been comforting to be able to Zoom to meetings. It's important to recall our declaration where we maintain anonymity, no crosstalk or side issues of personal anecdotes. Speak directly to the chairperson when called upon, please. And these traditions are designed to welcome all to the study of the philosophy of Theosophy without the distractions of any social differentiations or personal attributes. Let us all work to maintain these declared traditions, and we will cede to the chairperson at this time.
Good morning, and welcome to the United Lodge of Theosophists on Zoom and in Philadelphia. We'd like to welcome all to this study. And the reason why we come together is really illuminated in our declaration. So I'll read that now. The policy of this lodge is independent devotion to the cause of Theosophy without professing attachment to any theosophical organization. It is loyal to the great founders of the Theosophical movement, but does not concern itself with dissensions or differences of individual opinion. The work it has on hand and the end it keeps in view are too absorbing and too lofty to leave it the time or inclination to take part in side issues. That work and that end is the dissemination of the fundamental principles of the philosophy of Theosophy and the exemplification and practice of those principles through a truer realization of the self, a profounder conviction of universal brotherhood. It holds that the unassailable basis for union among Theosophists, wherever and however situated, is similarity of aim, purpose, and teaching, and therefore has neither constitution, bylaws, nor officers, the sole bond between its associates being that basis. And it aims to disseminate this idea among Theosophists in the further of unity. It regards as Theosophists all who are engaged in the true service of humanity, without distinction of race, creed, sex, condition, or organization. And it welcomes to its association all those who are in accord with its declared purposes and who desire to fit themselves by study and otherwise to be the better able to help and teach others. The true Theosophist belongs to no cult or sect, yet belongs to each and all. To carry out these proposed ideas found in our declaration, we hold three weekly meetings. For the month of October, our overall theme is the ocean of Theosophy and universal Theosophy. Today's class is on how has Theosophy influenced modern culture. Now, Wednesday's meeting, which begins at 7:30 and ends at 8:45, will be on the subject of the evolution of the cosmos, general governing principles. Then on Friday, we have a open roundtable where we are discussing articles from Mr. Judge's Heart Doctrine. And this Friday will be on the future, a few reflections. And next Sunday, We will find the topic will be the fundamental principles of theosophy. That starts at 11 and ends at 12. Now on Sunday, we have the Theosophy Hall is open to the public, and everyone is welcome to come in. Those doors open at 10:30, and the meeting starts at 11 as well, and ends at 12. So our topic for this morning is, how has theosophy influenced modern culture? Well, today we're having a forum, and our speaker will elucidate on that idea. Unmute.
Unmute, please. Unmute.
There we go. So how has theosophy influenced modern culture? We believe to speak to this topic, we have to define the word culture. If we define culture as the way of life of a particular people, nation, or social group, especially as shown in their ordinary behavior and habits, their attitudes towards each other, and their moral, religious beliefs, philosophies, science, and other manifestations of human intellectual achievement, regarded collectively, such as their literature, their values, their mores, their music, their art, their dance and theater, etc., etc. It goes on and on. So as you see, this definition is extraordinarily encompassing in its boundless catalog of cultural aspects. To explore, and therefore, we will only have time this morning to point out a few instances of theosophical influence, and this leaves you the opportunity to research the countless others. As you see, well, I'm sure you will agree that you cannot mention theosophy and the theosophical movement without looking at its beginning. The genesis of this movement takes root in one extraordinary woman named Helena Petrovna Blavatsky. Christmas Humphreys, and that's his real name, was a British senior prosecuting counsel at the Old Bailey. He was a judge, an author, and a publisher, a theosophist, and a Buddhist. He formed the Buddhist Lodge of the Theosophical Society. He was asked to contribute an article on HPB for another author, and he wrote the following. What a woman. Misunderstood, vilified, and abused, and yet with a brilliant, cultured, and deeply learned mind, the very soul of generosity. A woman of direct speech and action, refusing to talk to the pious platitudes and nonsense that we chatter under the guise of socially good manners, but offering the truth for everyone that wanted it. She was never neutral or the same to all. She made a great number of friends who would die for her, and enemies that would kill if they could. Those strong blue eyes could see into the character of every man and woman who came to her, and even see by whom she would later be betrayed. She would help from her meager funds all those in need, even though she knew at the time that they were planning to smash the cause she had given her life to serve. As a speaker, she was magnetic. She never lectured, but she would talk, and those who could hear could think of nothing else. In 1920, when I came to the movement, I knew a number of people who had known her very well. And on this they were agreed, that after meeting her, nothing quite was ever the same. Another fellow, Jeremy Tarcher, who was a publisher of nonfiction bestsellers, describes H.P. Blavatsky as a visionary trailblazer. She, more than any other person, was responsible for the introduction of Eastern religious and spiritual thinking into Western religion, science, psychology, art, and literature. And speaking of having great influence, wasn't it H.P. Blavatsky that was responsible for Colonel Henry S. Alcott and William Q. Judge, two men with impeccable resumes, along with so many others, joining the movement in its infancy? Let's jump forward now to the end of the 19th century and the countries of Ceylon, or Sri Lanka, and India. In a book called Oriental Religions and American Thought by Professor Carl Jackson, he writes, "Weakened by inner decay and overwhelmed by foreign rule and missionary attacks, both Hinduism and Buddhism were at a low point by the end of the 19th century, with educated youth rapidly breaking away. One of the period's most dramatic developments was an astonishing resurgence by both, in which the Theosophical Society played a considerable role in sparking the desire for renewal. In the 1940s, India's renowned philosopher president, S. Radhakrishnan, expressed the same view. When, with all kinds of political failures and economic breakdowns, we, Indians, were suspecting the values and vitality of our culture. When everything around us and Indian culture, the Theosophical movement rendered great service by vindicating those values and ideas. The influence of the Theosophical movement on general Indian society is incalculable. In appreciation for what the Theosophical movement had done, the Indian government issued a stamp in 1975 commemorating the 100th anniversary of the founding of the Theosophical Society. The stamp displayed the seal of the society and its motto, "There is no religion higher than truth." Now let's switch to another area in which theosophy has greatly influenced the thinking of the general population. That would be in the reincarnation resonance. Although H.P. Blavatsky is credited with reviving belief in reincarnation in modern times, it was not until the middle of the 20th century that the number of reincarnationists accelerated at a rapid rate. After her death, this belief progressively spread among theosophical groups. It was very popular in the pervasive New Thought movement, the religious science churches, and also the Unity School of Christianity, whose founders were Charles and Myrtle Fillmore, who were both theosophists. By 1969, when the first Gallup poll was taken on the subject, 20% of the religious population of the United States believed in reincarnation. Today, whereas the younger Americans are less likely than their elders to believe in heaven and hell, younger adults are more likely to believe in reincarnation. If our math is correct, That amounts to roughly 109 million reincarnations in the United States based on a 2020 census of 329.5 million people. The hippie generation exerted considerable influence on the reincarnation resonance. The Beatles, for example, were intrigued by Eastern philosophy. What is perhaps not so well known is that Elvis Presley's deep interest in those metaphysical themes. In his book entitled Elvis, Albert Goldman lists some of the books Elvis studied for a number of years. Among those listed was the HPB's Secret Doctrine and The Voice of the Silence. The writings to which Elvis Presley devoted himself for the balance of his life were established in the 1870s in New York City by H.P. Blavatsky. Elvis always had on hand copies of HPB's writings. In fact, one little volume purporting to be translations by HPB of the most ancient ruins of Tibet. The Voice of the Silence was such a favorite of Elvis's that he sometimes read aloud from it on stage and was so inspired by it that he named his gospel group Voice. His interest was further aroused when he changed barbers and the new one introduced him to masters. Elvis discovered that there were so many great masters besides Jesus. There was Buddha, Muhammad, Moses, and many, many others, each chosen to serve a purpose. That he did read his books with great care is evident even from the appearance of his copies, which were dog-eared, travel-stained, and heavily underscored on almost every page. How seriously he tried to apply these studies is reported by his wife. "We have to control our desires," he told her, "so they don't control us." Now, there's so much more material to cover and so little time. Theosophy's influence touches every aspect of life, and this belief, this brief, small talk, is only an appetizer. So once again, the topic for today is how has theosophy influenced modern culture?
Well, if that was the appetizer, let's have the main dish. One side to that idea about Elvis and the Secret Doctrine, the rumor was that he had gave a copy of the Secret of the Voice of the Silence to Richard Nixon. Now, a very nice gesture. Now, what has science has found out that an idea once expressed has an effect, and it can leaven the whole mind of this century. So how has it done that? Well, science, literature, music, art, all have been affected by the ideas that have been expressed in the Secret Doctrine. Now, the ideas are many, but the one binding force is the Secret Doctrine and HPB. We find in her work in the Secret Doctrine, it has brought forward ideas that were completely unknown in the 1800s. In fact, in the 1800s, at the end of the 1800s, a physicist said, science knows all that it can know. So he says, I really feel bad for those scientists coming after us because there's nothing else to learn. Well, lo and behold, many things were discovered after that point. X-rays, radioactivity, radium, and especially electrons. So we find that there's some ideas that were discovered or became in our consciousness, awakened us to the expansion or the understanding of the mind. You know, Einstein kept a secret doctrine by his bedside. Max Planck used quantum physics. And Einstein's equation, E equals mc squared, which simply means that matter and energy are the same. That matter is condensed energy, and energy is matter spread out. So there are three things that Einstein brought forward, is that atoms are divisible. Before, they were thought that they were solid and not divisible, and they were stagnant, but they are, the other is that they are constantly in motion. And the third is that matter and energy are convertible. Now, I don't want to talk to you about all these things that happened or were exposed to theosophy or by theosophy, but we have to remember that there was an experiment done by rats, and they were put into a maze, and then they had offspring, and they were put through the same maze. And what they found is that what the first group learned, it was passed on to the second generation and the third generation. So and it's been therefore supposed that man is of the same nature, that as we grow, as we understand something, the next generation will understand it a little bit more. As was said, reincarnation became into the consciousness of humanity. But more than reincarnation, karma was expressed, of cause and effect. What you put out, you get back. And these are, again, only a few ideas. In literature, we have Yeats and George Russell, T.S. Eliot, James Joyce, D.H. Lawrence, Thornton Wilder, T.S. Eliot, all of these were affected or influenced by theosophy. In art, Kandinsky was concerned about the spiritual in art, and the Oriental influences were there. Mondrian, the founder of abstract art, who was Dutch, who perfected that style, had joined the Theosophical Society. Paul Klee, from Munich, a German, he was very much impressed. Paul Gauguin. We can go on and on, but let's just stop here. And perhaps we have some questions or maybe contributions of how you have found that that theosophy has influenced the minds of the people around you. ULT?
We have a question or comment here.
Yeah, well, yes. Academics at a local university here in Tufts University have told me, academics in religion and philosophy, told us that actually Madame Blavatsky is considered the grandfather of the New Age movement that sprang up in the 1980s, and we found that to be just fantastic. Seems like there would be a lot of implications there from theosophy.
So it was said at a local university by professional teachers, professors, that HPB apparently is considered the progenitor of the modern New Age movement.
Exactly. She was the mother of the New Age movement. And so we find in our academic institutions, they are studying the secret doctrine at Harvard and at Yale. There are study groups, and there are many professors that have ordered the secret doctrine year after year after year. And it was asked why, because they were marked up so much from 1 year of study that they had to get a new one the next year. So the secret doctrine has exposed our scientific community to these ideas. SL?
You think so much can be understood about the influence of theosophy on our modern culture just with the researching reincarnation. It was mentioned that a good percentage of the adult population in the United States believes in reincarnation. Many of these are of Western faith, but also the sciences were mentioned. The University of Virginia, under the leadership of the chairman of the Department of Psychiatry for many years, made a systematic study of reincarnation and reports of reincarnation, so much so that it is an accepted branch, and his articles had been accepted until he passed away into many psychiatric and psychological journals. His parents were theosophists. And we also can look at the tremendous amount of books on reincarnation, past lives, so much so that it's even permeated our therapies. legitimate or not, people go to therapists to learn about their past lives and how karma and reincarnation apply in the experiences of their lives and how they react to it.
Yes, we find in our literature many themes of reincarnation found in books like Ulysses, Finnegan's Wake, and Jack London's The Star Rover and Before Adam. And then even in the popular James Joyce's book, From Here to Eternity, it has permeated our society. And all these ideas have come directly from the theosophical movement, because many of these people have been influenced by the work of HPB. She was held in high regard by many authors. You know, Thurton Wilder, T.S. Eliot, D.H. Lawrence, Jack London, E.M. Foster. There are many, many, many writers that have incorporated the ideas of reincarnation into their writings. J.C.S.?
This is all very, very true. And for the student of theosophy who wants to stay true to the original concepts and propositions that HPB reinforced or brought again, reincarnated in her work, we have to be on guard, because when we say that things like the New Age all came from HPB, the answer's got to be no. She set up certain philosophical concepts and propositions to be looked at. And this New Age term includes many, many, many efforts, not all of which are spiritual or high in their practice. So as students of theosophy, we can study all of the New Age movements. We can study all of these different authors and artists and scientists. But what we're aiming to do is to look into what these latter day kaleidoscope of teachings exhibits, to get back to that pure line of what she laid down, what she brought forth from the arcane periods.
Yes, there are fundamental ideas that are found in theosophy. And what was just said is very correct, that we live in a very materialistic age, and that these ideas have been materialized and used for profit. And there alone is a indication that we should be wary. If people are gaining money from these ideas, it's something that, as a theosophist, we find very, very upsetting, that this knowledge and these truths are our inheritance. So yes, be wary and find out what the fundamental ideas are of theosophy. ULT?
So we were thinking about this. Would it be more accurate to say that H.P. Blavatsky, with others, in 1875, made metaphysics mainstream? It had always been a backwater. It had been vilified. It had been poo-pooed. And the scientific study, which in her first publication in 1877, Isis Unveiled, followed by her magnum opus in 1888 of The Secret Doctrine, she was coming out against the forces of spiritualism, warning about them, recognizing what was correct, because they weren't all wrong, but trying to put a different direction to redirect the spiritualist. And they vilified her for that. They became very indignant, many of them. And many of them left the early theosophical movement because they're much more concerned with wonder seeking. So we were just wondering if we can discuss the fact that theosophy made metaphysics mainstream.
Well, we would think that metaphysics was never even mentioned in our society to any great extent until HPB came on the scene. And it's true that these ideas were poo-pooed. They were fought against. And it wasn't until later that they began to be assimilated into our society. And today, metaphysics is considered an idea that has permeated our sciences and our literature, that there is that which is beyond the physical, and there is that which is the metaphysical. SL, you had a...
Yes, we were thinking that one of the ways we can see how it's permeated the thinking of the average human being, say something like reincarnation, which is metaphysical in its understanding, is coming face to face with genius, extraordinary genius, at a very young age, an age when they seem to have some talent in understanding the emotional nature or music or art or whatever, that is way beyond the years. We'll hear this term, these are old souls. And whereas many people still attribute it to the grace of God or a gift from God, many, many more people are openly saying in open formats that it's, if anything proves reincarnation to them, it's the presence among us of individuals who bring into life at a very early age an understanding, a genius at something, which they should not be able to have. So that's part of our culture, the way we take these metaphysical ideas and just automatically apply them to the mysteries of life.
Well, we are told and we know that these ideas are embedded in our very nature, and that many who have come to it understand it almost immediately. They understand the ideas that are put forward in theosophy. And therefore, again, we pass on from generation to generation what we have learned, what we have assimilated into our culture. And these ideas are now permeating the world. For instance, Russia banned HPB's work for a long time. But then Mikhail Gorbachev invited, I'm not sure if I say his name right, but a artist and a proponent of Madame Blavatsky's work to open a museum in Moscow. So, you know, it's the ideas are again permeating our society. ULT?
We have a contribution from the audience here.
Hi, so I was brought to theosophy mainly through the text of Alice Bailey and also through an interest in, I guess you could call, quantum physics and things like that. But these are things that I don't really understand. I don't have a mathematical background to know. But as I read and study more of them, I read a book called The Dancing Movie Masters by Gary Zukav. I read a treatise on cosmic fire, not the whole way through, but it's very thick. But as I read these things and as I study them, it's what I see running through everything is that there is one, the ideas that were brought forth by Blavatsky and then kind of at least in my reading, cemented by later writers such as Alice Bailey, is that there is this spiritual basis of energy becoming matter, as you said, and that came about in the 1870s, and then through the 1920s, 1940s, and whatever else, there was suddenly science took it very, very seriously. And it became not just, it went from being this poo-poo joke to, oh, this is actually how the world works. This is like, whenever I read a treatise on cosmic fire, I was like, this is string theory. That's what it is. And it's kind of incredible because so much, I was recently in a bookstore and I saw it and I found a book that was decrying H.P. Blavatsky. And it just seemed, the entire text and the entire note of it contained this arrogance that we already know everything. And what draws me to theosophy personally and things like that is that it has a sense of wonder and humility it's impossible to not feel humbled and not feel in awe of the universe that's in infinite in all directions around you. And that's what Blavatsky's writings and kind of began for me, I guess is what I'm trying to say. But yeah.
So we heard the comment, and did everyone hear that? Because no, didn't hear it?
Oh.
Okay. All right. Well, we'll try to summarize that the contributor mentions all the multifaceted theories that have come forth in the theosophical movement, the whole milieu. And there have been latter day writers. One that was mentioned was Alice Bailey, who was a theosophist, and then she wrote about her take on things, as have many others. And so quite an influence, influenced others, influenced various movements. Of course, here we study just the writings at the United Lodge of Theosophists, Theosophy Hall. We study the original teachings, and of course, anyone is welcome to explore any of the other writers. It's always good to compare and contrast and examine and assimilate. So that's all we have to say.
Are you sure?
Well, you can say more too, can't you?
Yeah. Well, theosophy celebrates the dignity of man, that we are raised up, because the idea of Darwin is materialistic idea. We have descended from the heavens. We have descended from spirit into matter. We are divine beings in our very, very nature. We are beings of light, and we are eternal. So reincarnation is simply the mechanism by which we unfold. We begin to realize who and what we are. So yes, theosophy has leavened the whole bunch of us. SL?
To add to that, theosophy puts forth the proposition that human beings are dignified, the dignity of human beings, but also the sanctity of nature, because both humanity and nature are temples of that universal spirit that the previous contributor mentioned. So if we want to track or locate those sparks in our modern culture that were influenced or carrying on that theosophical impulse, look to their message, look to their movement. Are they promulgating the idea of the dignity of the human being and the sanctity of nature and our responsibility to care for both?
That idea is very profound, that all of life is alive. Now, when we come to that understanding, rocks are alive, minerals have a spark of life in them. So therefore, if we look into the heavens, we see planets. So we have to surmise that all planets are man-bearing. They either were, they are, or they will be. So when we expand upon the basic ideas, we find that we can apply it to many ideas that we hear on television or in literature and so forth. JCS, you had a comment?
Yeah, there's actually a chat. Do you want me to read it to you?
Yes, please.
The chat is, look how popular cremation has become in our culture. We can thank theosophy for it. And that chat, of course, ties nature and the human being together, doesn't it?
Yes, it certainly does. And in fact, cremation was not the modern practice, because the body was held in such revere that, because we thought we were the body, we didn't want to extinguish it. We wanted to preserve it and stick it in the ground, and like maybe it'll resurrect. But we have come to learn that by cremation, we release all these skandhas or all these tendencies to go back into nature more rapidly. And that's not only a benefit to the person who has died, but also to those around them, because there is a release of these emotions.
Thank you. Before, in the talk, it was mentioned about the motto of the Theosophical Society, there is no religion higher than truth. Apparently, it appeared on that 1975 commemorative stamp in India. So one of the profound influences was, of course, in 1893, we have actual articles and documentation of the World Parliament of Religions, which brought together for the first time in modern times, probably not since the time of Alexandria, Egypt, scholars and great religious leaders from all over the world, different religions, to discuss the problems of humanity and try to understand those common truths and ethics that could be applied. In 1993, they had the 100th year anniversary of that, and which was pretty much influenced by modern day theosophists. Some of us had the opportunity to attend that. And every 3 years since then, there's been a reconvening of that Parliament of World Religions. But it's not alone. Right here in Pennsylvania, suburbs of Philadelphia, at Haverford College, the chairman and professor of the Department of Philosophy is a very key figure in a world gathering of scientists, philosophers, theologians, for this very, very same reason, to look at the common truths, to dialogue, rather than to believe that any one religion is the sole possessor of the truth.
It brings to mind that a universal brotherhood is a fact in nature, and that the World Parliament of Religion was organized by William Q. Judge. He was a great factor in its coming forward. ULT?
Yes, go ahead.
Listening to a lecture from Pablo Sender from this society. I forget what the topic was, but he was talking about the process that a soul goes through or a spirit goes through after they die. And he was like, if you're attached to the material world, as you go through the process of, I guess, fully releasing itself from, this world, being reincarnated or whatever, but when he was talking about the cremation process, what is the cremation process, a way to circumvent that process of having to? Because he was explaining, like, if you're attached to the material world, like addictions or money or people, you understand what I'm saying, you linger around and you have that that strong desire to keep doing those things, but you can't because you don't have a physical body to satisfy it. And then I wanted to understand the cremation process. When exactly, how exactly does it free the soul or the spirit? The soul, that's my second question. The soul and the spirit are two separate things. These are not the same.
Okay, two things, a contribution. One was from somebody from the Theosophical Society, which we don't use names here. Well, Pablo Sender is his name, but he's a member of the Theosophical Society and he's a popular lecturer. We're the United Lodge of Theosophists, so there are some differences between the two. So was talking about cremation, release of body, various tendencies of a lower nature that one may have. Does cremation circumvent certain things, those certain attachments? And then secondly, the difference between soul and spirit. So there's quite a lot there. So we'll let the chair take it from here.
Well, thank you.
Sure.
Well, the cremation releases all those tendencies from the body, and they release all the attachments that body has acquired, and it helps those that are still present or alive to dissipate those feelings of attachment. And what was the second question?
Are soul and spirit the same? Are they the same, soul and spirit?
Well, we are all spirit, but spirit manifests as soul. There's a higher soul, there's a human soul, there's an animal soul. So these are all aspects of the one spirit. So soul and spirit are the same, but they differ in degree.
So we have a follow-up here, and could the moderator mute the phone that keeps popping up? Go ahead.
The function of this spirit is for the evolution of the soul, because he talked about souls on different levels. So the function, what is the function of the spirit, and what is the function of the soul?
All right, what is the function of the spirit and what is the function of the soul? It's very difficult to use English words to describe metaphysics. We have someone at Theosophy Hall who would like to take that.
As soon as we jump into these metaphysical ideas, not having studied them for many years, sometimes it's hard to convey literally what it is, but it's very helpful if we use analogies. And one analogy we found helpful in understanding this idea is air is to spirit as wind is to soul, because in wind, it's particular, it has force, it has a certain lifespan. There are things about wind that are in operation in nature, whereas air is just kind of there and ever present.
Okay, air is to spirit as wind is to soul.
We are told that we are all spirit, and the analogy that was given is very, very good. But if we look at us as being spirit, what is spirit but a flame, a light? And that is what we are. We're beings of light. And that this being of light, as it descends into matter, develops these souls on which to operate on that plane of substance. So as the spirit descends, it descends into that plane called Buddhi, which is the highest spirit. No, I'm sorry, highest soul. And then it gathers about it the human soul on which to function on that plane. And then the animal soul to function on that plane. So soul is the vehicle. Spirit is the driver.
I have a question, Theosophy Hall. Go ahead.
Yep.
We just wanted to make sure that we create,
louder.
We just wanted to put forth the idea in regards to cremation that the soul is not affected by cremation at all, because soul is everlasting. That hasn't been brought up in this discussion about soul and spirit. So just wanted to make sure that it was known that soul is not affected, that it goes into the after death state.
Okay, so soul, we could also say, we could use the term eternal pilgrim. It's not affected per se, as we think the comment was.
In theosophical terms, it's Atma and Buddhi that is the eternal pilgrim, and latent within that eternal pilgrim is mind. It is present in everything, spirit, soul, and mind or intelligence. SL?
Just to follow up, whereas it is true, soul or the thinking spiritual entity, which the human being really is spiritually, is not affected by cremation. It is, the process of cremation assists its entering into those higher spiritual states we call Devakan or whatever, because of the fact that the attachments to the body and the passions and the senses are more quickly dissipated and released as a result of the cremation of the physical body and the subsequent easier disintegration of the other principles related to it.
Yes, a release. We have a few moments. Anything?
Unmuted. Can't hear you.
We remember from our earlier years, a actress that expounded the idea of reincarnation. And she was poo-pooed a lot. They thought she was crazy. It was Shirley MacLaine. But she brought that idea forward, and we find that quite interesting, that there are those amongst us that really have a clear grasp of these ideas. But we all have those ideas within us, and what we are doing now is rediscovering them by delving into these ideas. We reawaken in ourselves these ideas because they are latent within. So by studying this, one is leavening the whole mass of humanity. We are raising it up, even though we are small, but we are mighty. SL?
Just to point out that just as the printing press had such a profound effect on the cultural development in the West, in the Renaissance, moving into the modern age, the digital media revolution, the computer revolution, in so many ways, has greatly influenced the impact that the theosophical teachings have had on our culture. just the easier access and the interchange between individuals all over the world at any time, in any place, direct contact with the teachings. And people, not even students of theosophy, having access and influence from the ideas. Like, really, it's hard to calculate how much has been achieved through those technological advances.
Yes, but we attribute that to the discovery of the electron, that it has become so diverse and used by our minds to develop these devices. Well, we hope you found these ideas to be encouraging and to be, lifting one up. So we invite you to come to our meeting on Wednesday night at 7:30 and then on Friday at 6:30. So have a good day and peace be with you.